This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Established in middle of 2014, Reach Energy Berhad, the fourth and largest oil and gas special purpose acquisition company, has successfully accomplished their initial public offering, with both its shares and warrants officially commencing trading on the main board of the Bursa Malaysia Securities Berhad. And Reach Energy is another series of companies of SPAC. This morning, I have Shahul Hamid Ismail, the Managing Director and CEO of Reach Energy, to discuss the recent QA announcement that they have made earlier this year. If you have any questions for either Reach Energy or Shahul Hamid himself, you can tweet us at BFM Radio or you can text us at 016-201-9000. Initially, we've had this whole debate whether or not SPACs is a good idea for investors in particular, and whether or not it can provide that kind of protection into the system. But it seems that with two SPACs now in question, with Click Energy commencing winding down, and of course, Sonapetroleum having to go through a lot to reach some sort of verdict with their shareholders on their QA. Do you think that Reach Energy has what it takes to pull through and get the approval for your QA announcement?
Good morning. And I honestly believe that SPACs are good value. In fact, disregard of what is happening around us, I believe that in many respects, the SPACs are good value. I'm very confident that our acquisition will go through because I firmly believe in the value of this qualifying acquisition that we have just recently announced. In fact, if you look in the United States where SPACs originated recently, there have been a lot of interest in SPACs. And as recent as last week, I read an article where in Wall Street, quite a number of SPACs are being promoted. And that gives the confidence of the investment community.
The problem is not with the SPACs per se. The problem is with the investors themselves. Do you think that the market is ready to buy into SPACs? Because many of these investors tend to be what we call now yield investors, where they like to short the market with just the right zero risk amount. Do you think this will pose a problem with, at least with Reach Energy?
I think it is a problem that we cannot ignore, and we need to continue to educate our investor community, that particularly for the E&P oil and gas sector, normally investors are more longer-term focused, and this means most of the investors will be in the institutional investment arena. For those public investors, they should tag along those that path, you know, of being more focused on the longer term. It is not a business, E&P is not a business where, you know, you just invest today and pull out tomorrow kind of a thing. So I'm actually glad to say that our investors in Reach Energy are, more of longer-term focused investors, and I'm continuing to promote that.
So it's interesting that you brought in the perspective of institutional investors versus now we know as retail investors. Mm. The problem with, at least with Sonapetroleum, is that their institutional investors are providing some sort of headache for them. Pacific Alliance, Asia Opportunity Fund, as well as some other institutional investors, they can gang up and try to vote down that kind of approval for assets. Do you think this will be the case for you?
Without being specific, I can say that, you know, no investor is blind to benefits. Even though you can have investors with arbitrage in mind and so on, but when they see the value of what you're presenting it to them, they could go the other way, you know, because I believe a lot of them have a mixed kind of portfolio, some so-called yield focused and the others more on the stock value kind of focus.
So either way, the core question right now would be what value do they see and what benefit do they see? It's interesting, Shahul, that you mentioned that no investor is shy towards benefits. Right now, let's talk more specifically about the QA that you have selected. Reach Energy plans to acquire 60% stake in the Kazakhstan's Emir oil fields for about over 600 million ringgit, and it is to be their first hydrocarbon asset. This is following your filing last month in March. How confident are you that this is truly a quality asset?
I am very confident. In fact, our strategy from day one was not just to get over the QA and graduate to become a normal listed company. Our strategy was to get a good asset, and that has remained unshakable all these months. We listed in August 2014, and within the period of the last 18 months or so, we have gone looking at some over 40 assets, and we had a very clear screening and evaluation criteria. We focused, of course, in the Asia-Pacific region, but we didn't shut our eyes and ears to quality assets in other parts of the world because, as you know, oil and gas industry, E&P in particular, is a global industry. And we exercise due diligence, and we, our team, including myself, we are through and through E&P people. You know, we worked for E&P companies. We didn't work for service companies or downstream companies or whatever. So we know the scenario very well. And we picked this asset amongst the many we looked at, and we have every confidence that this asset is in the prime of its production. It is not in the tail end or sunset arena. It has many years. The lease, or rather the concession, is for another 20 years. Many upsides. All these were the ones that actually made this asset rank top.
Now, of course, when you entered the market, as in you mean Reach Energy, oil prices was over $100 per barrel. Supply was not a problem. Today, we have a supply glut. Oil prices cannot break that $40 mark any longer, hovering below in the low 30s. Perhaps even this morning, I think it's over $40. Is there a case then for oil exploration and production, or are you just adding more supply to the market, therefore you can't get that kind of yield from selling at a high price?
This is a producing asset that we have announced, and you can see when the oil price is down, it's the best time to acquire. This is the time when a lot of oil and gas companies are rationalizing their portfolio. They are not just throwing away assets, you know. They are just making sure they consolidate a bit, you know. They are in need of cash to develop for certain things, so they may divest here, divest there, acquire. So there is a lot of M&A going on. In fact, in 2015, I think globally it was a record M&A for E&P sector. So we were fortunate to get into that period for acquisition. And now I think when you acquire at a low price, and I look at the experts forecasting oil price scenario, in fact, I've said that I believe, and so do many experts, that it has oil prices bottomed out. And what you're seeing is slow rise back to the higher levels. I'm not saying that it'll get to 100 plus in the near term. It will get to more realistic pricing in the 70s and 80s in the next few years. So when you plug that into your economics, when you acquire a low price scenario, then you are actually looking at the upsides, actually.
This morning, I'm speaking with Shahul Hamid Ismail, the Managing Director and CEO of Reach Energy, that has joined us this morning. And we're talking about the qualifying asset that they are planning to purchase in Kazakhstan. Up next, we'll be talking more about their QA. This is BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, this morning I'm speaking to Shahul Hamid Ismail, the CEO of Reach Energy, a special purpose as an acquisition company, a SPAC in the oil and gas sector. SPAC companies, Shahul, is not doing too great right now, and much of the problems lie with investors per se. But let's focus on something that can be under your control, which is the acquisition of those assets that you're looking forward to. You've been quoted by the press last month saying that Reach Energy is way ahead of your timeline to actually acquire these assets. Does it mean that trying to find this QA was done hastily, or was the proper management done, the kind of evaluation done properly in trying to identify the QA?
The 3-year period given since listing is a realistic period. And from day one, we planned that we must submit and get our asset within the first 2 years. That's why from day one, if you recall, I have been saying to our investors, we will complete our QA within 2 years. Because the last year is really a year to make sure everything is safe and sound. You know, if you leave it to the third year, then you are cutting it too thin. That is why I was really clear that we should select our candidate. And looking at 40 over candidates is not a short list.
So it's not a rush job.
It's not a rush job. We went through a very thorough process. And bear in mind, we have had in-house resources to screen all these things. Otherwise, again, we don't want to spend investor money unnecessarily. So when we selected the shortlisted candidates, real shortlisted to 2 candidates, we spent some money utilizing the due diligence process with more external experts, you know, which of course cost us money, you know.
Yeah.
So in my own mind, I can honestly say that we did a very good job of putting ourselves into a proper timeline. So at the moment, we are preparing our submission to the SC, which we are hoping to submit in April. Then if you give us our regulators perhaps 3 or so months, then we are targeting an EGM around the month of July, August, and that will be just the end of our 2-year period.
The problem with this is that the Emir oil field, they have plenty of oil wells, but not many of them are producing. Does this worry you?
Not at all. The 48 wells for an area 850 square kilometers, the size of 3 times the size of Penang Island and the size of bigger than Perlis State, is very efficient. In fact, you're talking about draining certain acreage per well is very good. In fact, some areas, smaller areas, you will find hundreds of wells. All 45 wells are in good shape. Just in 2015, because of the lower oil price, the operator or the vendor decided to scale down, decided to reduce the production.
But right now, only 16 wells or 17 wells are producing. Yeah. Does it provide some sort of restriction on maximizing your revenue?
No, because they have prudently kept... They targeted to produce about 4,000 barrels per day. They only needed to open up the 16 wells, you know.
Was there a reason between onshore and offshore and why you chose onshore?
For a company, I mean, I have lots of experience myself and my team working offshore, onshore and all that. But as a company, we are really a startup. You know, from beginning, we decided that we should go to an area or an operation where it'll be easier for us to come into the business. You know, so onshore offers that kind of environment as opposed to offshore. And we also wanted to select a location which is within good infrastructure, populated areas, not in the middle of nowhere, that kind of a thing. And this is where Emir Oil fits in very well as well, in addition to all the good things it has.
Based on recent reports, energy is registering some losses, not much in terms of aspects, but you did register losses of about 4.8 million ringgit as of first quarter last year. Things like this, does it bother you?
In fact, I think the investors should understand that we are not a revenue-generating company at this stage. We were given something like 5+% of the total money raised as working capital to acquire a qualifying acquisition.
Yeah.
You know, therefore, whatever we are doing, we are on really a cash out situation at the moment. You know, spending the money on prudently, nevertheless, on the needed things to get to us to that acquisition.
So this includes remuneration to the management team, finance costs, traveling, subsistence,
consultant costs, and we have been very, very prudent on this because we wanted to make sure that we have enough working capital. In fact, we took only 5.25% as opposed to previously 10% of the money raised, you know.
Yeah, I don't know how trivial this question sounds, but your revenue was mainly derived from profit earned from Sharia compliant FD placements. Was there a core reason you chose share placements?
No, not really. I think when you have that much of money in the trust account,
which is 750
million, or we started with about 710 million, you need to do justice to your investors that you need to put that money in certain yield-earning funds. And we chose Sharia compliant because we wanted to be a Sharia compliant company. We wanted to also attract investors who are Sharia compliant. And as you know, Tamu Haji is one of our big investors. So we want to keep them. We want to promote their involvement with us.
You know, you were on the show a few years ago and you were mentioning that you wanted to look for assets or QA in the Asia-Pacific region, and now Kazakhstan is in the picture. Why the change of direction there?
We looked at a lot of assets in the Asia-Pacific region, and the intention was not to just get a QA and get over it. And we wanted long-term, and that is why I think a lot of them didn't quite match that. You know, there were a few, but then the vendors were not willing to sell at the price, at the fair price. You know, so those sort of factors came in. And Kazakhstan is a big, what do you call it, oil and gas producing country. And there are a lot of oil and gas companies there, and they are probably in the top dozen oil producing companies or countries, you know.
Also, in the previous interview, you were mentioning that you wanted to look at having a mixed portfolio of E&P or exploration production and brownfields. Is this still part of the portion of pursuing brownfields as part of your business plan?
Emir Oil is perfect for that. You know, it has got producing fields within that 850 square kilometers. It's got development fields under development, and it's also have got exploration, drillable prospects in it.
With 750 million, you're going to be spending over 600 million on the acquisition. That leaves about, 100 million left? Is it enough to get this done?
You see, we wanted to actually, the whole idea is to spend all the money we raised, you know, to bring better value to the investors. You know, that is why the regulators put at least 80%, you know. And also, if you could raise debt, it is even better to, you know, we are zero gearing at the moment, you know. But unfortunately, of course, raising debt during a low oil price scenario is quite difficult.
Yeah.
So we have tried to maximize as much as possible value for our investors by putting the fund we raised effectively.
You were quoted on the show last time that you're looking at an IRR on some sort of investments return by about 15% from the QA. Do you think this is still manageable based on this QA that you've selected?
We have gone through the calculations and all that. It is well achievable in terms of what this asset
all right.
has.
Then this is the biggest question. Right now, I'm going to ask you, many of these that we've spoken about are within your control, within management's control, selection of QA, impression of the quality of assets into your upon your investors as well as the regulators. Do you think the investors will back this purchase eventually when the EGM is going to be conducted?
I have a lot of hope that our investors will back us, because our biggest strength is that we have a very good asset. And I have gone to great lengths to make this known to our investors through the announcement we made. And then subsequently, now after our submission and as the regulators allow, we will further engage our investors. So the most important thing is the asset is very good, bulletproof, solid, whatever words we want to use. And that is my strength at the moment.
So to my investors. Then we have to examine the complexion of your shareholders. Do you think that institutional investors, this includes your Tabung Haji that you mentioned earlier, EPF as well, all these other guys, are you having some sort of engagements with them, trying to explain to them in detail what's happening right now? What are your strategies in trying to impress upon at least the institutional investors?
I owe to my investors to explain the asset to them, and within what we have announced. And what you have announced may not be clear. In fact, the transaction is a little bit complex, so there was some misinterpretation that has put us into a bit of a bind. I wanted to explain that properly. It's a beautiful transaction arrangement. In fact, we are only paying $1 for the equity, and the rest of the money is buying up shareholder loan, which will be owed to us by the asset. and that's at a discount more. So that bit is the one that the analysts and journalists have not interpreted properly, you know, that, look, this transaction is wonderful. It's to the advantage of Reach Energy. In fact, the window has also allowed us to defer some payment, you know, and that's quite unusual.
So this is the thing, right? So I was asking Sona Petroleum on their QA, if it's very attractive, the asset that they're trying to purchase, why is it being given at a 50% discount? Now, notwithstanding what's happening with Sona, why is it that your vendor in Kazakhstan more than willing to actually part their asset? Are there any suitors there, and what makes Reach so attractive as a buyer that they want to engage with you guys?
Firstly, the vendor is an E&P operator in their own right. They have assets in China, they have assets in the US, they have assets in Kazakhstan. And they are actually selling part of this asset. They're not selling 100%, they're selling part of it because
60%.
And they want to raise money to do other work in the other assets. So that, the fact that they are not totally selling this asset gives comfort to our investor that there is, this asset is of value.
So-called the skin in the game.
Skin in the game. They have skin in the game. Yeah. In fact, they will work very closely with us. In our shareholder agreement, we Reach Energy will be the operator, the signature operator. We will have management control. We will have financial control and all that. But they will be our substantial partner.
Will there be some sort of an engagement or agreement for them to sell off everything and for you to purchase everything
We will retain that option.
Right.
You know, because I feel
so that you have the right for that option.
For that, because I feel that the asset has got a lot of value. Unfortunately, we don't have enough money.
Well, everyone has a problem, actually. So what's next for Reach Energy? Do you have any plans going forward?
Well, our plans are very clear. Priority is on making our submission to the regulators in April, and then engage with the regulators to get the approval as soon as possible and go to our AGM. In between, engage our investors, get them more comfortable with a very good investment we have found for them. It is not something at the sunset end of its life. It is at the beginning of its life. 20 years ahead, production is anything but going up and up and up. We are forecasting something as high as even we have announced it, up to 23,000 barrels per day. And we are investing, or our vendor at this stage is investing in facilities upgrades to cater for that. There was no such outlook. They will not be spending hundreds of million dollars into facilities upgrade. So these are the things I want to impress on our investors to stay with Reach Energy and reap the rewards of the stock value.
What's the future of specs per se, you think?
Personally, I like to see specs grow in this country. In fact, they are the first vehicle to get E&P stock into the market, into the stock exchange. And I think what is important is people who come to the spec must know the business. Specs should not be hijacked by just pure entrepreneurs and investors.
Yeah.
And that is why I salute the regulators for making sure that if it's an oil and gas spec, if it's an E&P spec, the E&P people running it. If it is a property spec, it is property people. It is a food and beverage spec. It is those sort of people. You know, that is important.
But there are case studies where it has not done well, Click Energy being one of them. Does that worry you on the future of specs?
I'm confident that the specs will grow in this country. And in places like the US and places like Korea, specs are not just surviving, they're growing, really.
I've been speaking to Encik Shahul Hamid Ismail, the MD and CEO of Reach Energy. Shahul, thanks for coming over again. Hopefully, you'll get some sort of a good impression from your investors following this interview.
I hope so, Ibrahim. Thank you so much for having me on air. Yeah.
I'm Ibrahim Sani for BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.